Golus of Klal Yisrael. The Benodim Chavira plays a very, very significant role. And consequently, in times of difficulty in the Gaonic period of the Crusades, they saw fit at that time to enact a mourning period for Rabbi Akiva's Talmid. It's rather remarkable if we think about it. Rabbi Akiva lived in the 2nd century. So, 900 years passed. And that entire period passed, the entire era. The Tanoim was still before the Seder HaMishnah. The entire 200 years of the period of the Amoraim. No Zeicha. All morning period for Rabbi Akiva's Talmid. The Rabbanon Sfaroid came and passed. Can you imagine now we'll decide that we're going to enact the mourning period for the martyrs of the Crusades? Not that it's unworthy, but if we manage to go for 1,000 years without doing it, why did we suddenly wake up now? And it's a medrash of Psikta, I believe. In the Chis of the Chazdacham, Zu the Altar, the Halt of the Ozacham, the Reka Chechom, that Klal Yisrael was waiting for Geula and Mitzrayim, and it didn't come. Wait, no, it's not here. There was no promise. Nefse Schlepzach, it's not, we're not getting it. So what did they do? Is in the Chis of the Chazdacham, Zu the Altar, Sikta translates that Klal Yisrael involved themselves in chesed for each other. They started doing chesed for each other, to extend themselves in chesed. And they abide a zeicha to the Gula, Mzugolta. That even in Mitzrayim, the necessary precursor to the Gula was an increase in the Beit Odom HaChavera. And then it's really Chazal have said it very directly. At the very beginning of Golus Mitzrayim, as Moshe Rabbeinu was a young man, and it says, Ochein Noda Hadova. Now, Ochein Noda Hadova has meaning at very many different levels. In the storyline of the Chumash, it refers to the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu Vayachas HaMitzrayim, and Ochein Noda Hadova. My involvement in that, Rayif and Kovoko, he thought that he had committed the perfect murder that no one knew about. And they, unfortunately, there are witnesses, it's known. And he drew the necessary conclusions from that, that he better run for his life. But Chazal tell us that there's a deeper meaning that Moshe Rabbeinu beheld the suffering of Klal Yisrael. And he says, well, what brought this about? Why should they suffer in such fashion? Chay noida adover del titurin, the Bali Lashon Hara. If they're Bali Lashon Hara, then I understand what I see. On the other hand, we find that says the door of Achav or Oydeh of Edizah. But they went to war, and they were victorious in battle constantly. Why? Because the Beit Odom HaChavera was strong between them. So Chazal themselves have painted for us very clearly the problems of Beit Odom HaChavera as promoting Golus. And Yeshua is promoted by Chizuk and Ben Adon Lachavera. And even such unlikely figures as the Dor of Achav and all the Oibdei Avodah the Zohar that in the Onovi was the challenge at Har Karma, that they were victorious in war. The Gemara says in Yevamos that Talmid and Rabbi Akiva, may know who copied Zemizah. What the Mashah says is that they spoke Lashon Hara about each other. That was the absence of kovan that they had.
To talk to Mara says this?
Marshal. The same issue that Moshe Rabbeinu saw in Mitzrayim was true of Talmidei Rabbi Akiva. And the results were dire. What were the consequences of what takes place? The Gemara goes on. Remember, we're dealing now between the year 100 and 140 of the Common Era. He was killed approximately the year 140. So we're dealing approximately, in round numbers, between the year 100, 30 years after the Churban, and 70 years after the Churban. One can imagine the tremendous ray of hope that existed in Klal Yisrael. And that Rabbi Akiva has a following of 24,000 Talmidim. It's an enormous amount of Talmidim. In the shadow of the Churban of Beis Hamikdash, the hope of Shimon ben Yochai, Yavne v'chachamel, the Torah would bloom. And here it is. There's a future. There's something for Klal Yisrael. And suddenly, in a few weeks, it shattered. It disappeared. Fizzles. To such an extent, Atrei Olam Shomei, that there was very little Torah in the world. There were no young Talmidei Chachamim. Atrei Rabbi Akiva Yitzhar Abaseinu Shebedor. And these are the Tanoim, or the mainstay of the Mishnah, Beis, etc., Mozart. And this is the mainstay of Shas. Shas is built upon these Talmidim, the latter Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva. The earlier Talmidim, we have no Zecher. A Shas which is built on five Talmidim. He had 24,000 Talmidim. So good. Naniach, we'll say not everyone was so great, but it would have been many more people than five great ones.
But isn't it possible that spread out over those many, he's not going to have the same impact? Because the Russian can't have connection, the Shir, the high cannot.
That's not. They did not have this problem. The nature of how the world worked was different. They did not work so much by personal connection. Even at the time of the Gaonim. The Shir in the time of the Goyim, when the Goyim came to the Shir, they said Shir once a week. What was the Shir? The Shir was all the kashas that the Talmidim and Yeshiva got stuck on all the in the last week. So they threw all the kashas at him, they answered them, and that was the Shir. And they saw him next week. The growth, and Chazal said there were 24 Vayyad and Shama. This was a devastating loss. Shas, could we imagine the chidushim that we'd have in Shas? We had all of these Talmudim. And yet the Hashgach ordained that the Torah that will be perpetuated in Klal Yisrael is not from them. It's from the five latter Talmudim. Why? Because the five latter Talmudim epitomized the after the Reach HaKadosh. Perhaps we can speculate that that's why this was Rabbi Akiva's mantra. Zeh Klal Golda B'Torah V'Ahavta L'Reacha Kamoicha. Had five Talmidim. And he said, Rabbi Isa, there used to be 24,000 Talmidim. What happened?
Only five has been
4,000. Five new ones. The first 24,000 were gone all the other.
24,000?
Can you imagine what that means? We can't even imagine such an argument.
It's like Chas v'Shalom. Most of the major yeshivas today.
Never pass.
How can 24,000 speak Russian? And these are the greatest people. It's so mind-boggling. Yeah. So where these five new ones come from? Must have been from the 24.
No. There are five new Talmidim. Nothing to do with the 24.
Was that because it was a time thing, or was that because they were at the yeshiva?
It's hard to know. You can't speculate. You can speculate that there are two types of strivings in the world. People strive for money, people strive for honor, prestige. And most of life and people's strivings is a trade-off of one for the other. If you want to give a person a white-collar job, it'll take one purpose. If you want to give him to have him do a blue-collar job, be a ditch digger for you, not so willing to do it. It's not dignified. If you came and you offered him $300,000 a year to be a ditch digger, he'd forget about his color to go dig ditches out to get commissioned on 11, you know. The money is enough. It's not a problem. So life is a constant trade-off in men's pursuits in this world between money and comfort. In the world of business, you can chase money. In the academic world, you can't chase money. Professors are not among the world's richest men. But in the academic world, chase prestige, comfort. That's the coin of the realm. That's what's respected. And it can easily get out of hand. That each one desires to be one step ahead of the other one. And one way of doing that is to make sure you push everybody down. So there are tremendous, there are Yetzirahs. So Rabbi Akiva comes forward with a haftalah reyachal kamarich.
So is the Rav learning that that's after the death of the 24,000?
The haftalah reyachal kamarich, yeah.
For sure that's sourced, or you just...
I imagine it to be so. They tell me others imagine it to be so, too.
Because it couldn't have been before, because then we wouldn't
have... Well, because before, there would be less of the 24,000 that would have also... Well,
probably. There wouldn't have been such, you know.
So Rabbi Akiva must be about 70, 80 years old at this point.
Yeah, Rabbi Akiva at this point is between 80 and 120. Yeah, that's the years that he was leaving, between those years, the last third of his life. So... He preaches constantly, and this, and we understand Zechal Galubadon. The entire Torah stands in this. Without this, there is no Torah. Just look what happened. And the Ramchal writes the following. He's very, very strong, the Ramchal. He's the biggest chosid of the Rabbi Akiva, the Ramchal.
In this or in general?
In this. The biggest chassid of Rabbi Akiva. I've yet to see a statement with such a powerful approach to Rabbi Akiva.
Some said the Ramchal was the Gilgal of Rabbi
Akiva. Shayetzer Hoylech.
Some said that the Ramchal was the Gilgal because the first 40 years Rabbi Akiva didn't learn. I think the Ramchal died like at 39. Kabbalah.
No,
that's not Torah Nista.
It's also, be very careful. Gilgal is the wrong pshat. Gilgal was a negative thing. Be very careful. The world is very grossly mistaken in using that term to describe this. There are nyonim of neshamas that are associated. Not Google, but the Shoresh Nishmoslem. Similar. I spoke with an Adam Gold, the Seish Adam Gold, I felt, despite the fact that he never spoke about it, but Ergashti, that he Yod of Rovloy, and Yod of Nistert, and he was Moscow. He's talking about sinah, resentment of others, hatred of others, bearing a grudge, vengeance, at least netira, netira is resentment. The yetzara inflames the heart. that if I'm not going to take revenge for the guy, at least to let him know, to get into him somehow. You know, in the grossest fashion, as Rashi says, to tell him, listen, I'm better than you are. I don't do the types of things that you do. I don't want to do it in such fashion.
I'm not like you. I'll give you the shovel.
Yeah. Just a raised eyebrow, like, you're listening, you know? Without saying a word, but he let him know, I know who you are, I didn't forget. Then at least something, potable and clue, you know, to let him to get off fully. It's, you know. Yoimar derech moshe. You're a good guy. You want to help him out. You know, when I was down and out and I needed help, he refused to help me. And now the wheel is turned and he needs the exact same help from me, but I'm not thinking I'm going to help him out. But the focus was that they would save upon the office. Make him score. Don't smile on you. You know, give him a sideways look. Let him know that, you know, you don't appreciate him. You don't want to do any harm to him. But the pachos la seitu le toibu gedoyle vado to say I'll see you go. Don't go to the nth degree to help him. Help him part way. Let him sweat. Tirtzagan to say I'll harbe. No, I'll help him really to the nth degree. But the pachos la seitu le toibu gedoyle. But I won't do it in his back. I'll do it behind his back so he won't have the satisfaction that I'm the one that helped him out. Although social, this chabrim over the Oslodoraya. I won't forgive him and be his friend again. This is assuming, obviously, that he's no longer doing the things which aroused my enmity in the first place. I mean, if he keeps on doing these things, so then obviously he's not going to be my good friend. Listen, I forgive him. I don't consider you one of my enemies. It's 9%. That's enough. You want to be friendly with him? But he's not on the A-list anymore. Let's forget about it. That's not going to happen. And all of these swift approaches on the Yetzirah. The Yetzara pushes us to all of these things. These things are very real things in life. Because the resentment which fuels them is very real. We're not dealing with childish things, we're dealing with things, more serious things in life. And so someone failed me seriously. So the Torah gave us one rule to solve the whole problem. Right, this is Losiko or the Siddhos Bnei Amecha. How does the pasuk end? Vahavta L'Rayacha Kamo Yecha Ani Hashem. What's the answer to this all? Vahavta L'Rayacha Kamo Yecha. Now look at the Mesilas Yishon. And as I say, he's the most ringing chosid, endorsement, the biggest chosid Rabbi Akiva. Kamo Yecha B'loi B'li Shom Hefresh, with no differentiation. B'li chilukim, with no difference whatsoever. B'li tachbulos o'mazimus, without any cunning artifice. Kamoicha mamash. Very, very few, I think, of the mechabrim took v'ahavta l'rayacha kamocha to such an extent. There were those that argued, and it's based really on the Rishonim, that Hillel's formulation is really more accurate. And that is, if I don't want, I would dislike someone doing something to me, I shouldn't do it to someone else. But I have to reach a kamocha. I mean, the halacha itself says, chayecha kaitan, I take precedence. And I have to reach a kamocha. Even if he hasn't sinned against me, it doesn't seem that it has to go so far. And yet, the Ramchal, as I said, is the biggest chosid of Rabbi Akiva. Kamocha. I cannot say that we'll succeed in reaching the Ramchal's ethic. But striving towards that ethic is certainly worthwhile. So life, I'm less judgmental of people than I am anxious to learn from how life works, how it functions. I did not learn from my Rebbeinu to be very judgmental about people, but rather to be sympathetic to the human condition. I have a friend. And believe me, I don't mean it chalila to be critical of him, not in the least. I'll tell you two stories. His father had a business partner. And his business partner had a relative, nephew, whatever, I think a nephew. Relative. Needed a job. So his father's business partner asked his father to take him in a different business that the father owned. He owned more than one business. He was a wealthy man. So he took him in. And he worked, he was a good worker. I happened to visit, you know, my friend in the business, you know, from time to time. And this guy was a good, undoubtedly was a good worker, had a lot of responsibility. And after a few years that he was there, he joined forces with others that opened up competition with them. Okay, that's not the nicest thing in the world in the first place, under the circumstances. But what did they do? He knew all the customers of the first business, and he went after them hot and heavy, you know, undermining them in price and whatever, and doing whatever he could to pull them away. And he caused tremendous disruption to the first person's business, tremendous financial loss. Whatever, life went on. Years later, I don't know how many years later, I'm sitting in my friend, with my friend in his office one day, went to visit him, and I think I was there when it happened, or he told me that it had happened. Someone called him, and they wanted to make a certain purchase of what he manufactures. And he was out, and he wasn't going to have it for the foreseeable future. So he says to the guy, you know, call up that guy. He's likely to have it. And I'm sitting there, I almost fell off my chair. You know, we knew each other a long time. I knew very well the history of this parasha. I almost fell off my chair. So my friend says to me, I've forgiven him already. Life went on. He lost a lot of money because of him. It was a very, very trying time in his business, but I've forgiven him already. So I can't help my customer. Let him take care of him. It's okay, fine by me. Okay, I'm astounded that it was an effort to be able to do such a thing. And then he tells me to follow. There's one person in my life that I haven't forgiven. Since when I was about 14 years old, I went to yeshiva away from home. And where I was in yeshiva, I said the living circumstances were miserable, the food was miserable, I was away from home. It was not a very comfortable situation. So I went out one day, I slipped out of yeshiva, and I went to a real charedish restaurant in the city. I mean, I know the place. Anybody in the world will eat there. First rate kashrus. Food's good too, for them. And since, and I don't feel, I pretend I feel a little bit decent. So one guy in the yeshiva finds out about it, and he snitched on me. You know, the yeshiva that I was in, they were not very sanguine about such type of things. And you know, if you were caught with such a thing, it became a matter of public knowledge. And life was pretty miserable for me in yeshiva after this. He says, so what in the world did he do this for? Did I do anything so bad that he should have snitched on me? What did I do, you know? So he says he wants this guy, years later came, you know, he wanted to be my friend. He says, my enemy is not. You know, not, but my good friend is not going to be either. Yeah. Humiliation that a person suffers leaves its mark. It's very, very hard to overcome in life. in his person is an unusual person. They have the guru for the first story. It's a tremendous guru. Tremendous guru. And yet, in the second story, he could not rid himself of it. Why? Because one was money and one was humiliation. Pusha. He couldn't live that for himself. So, we have a great deal to strive for. But it's the message of the Maya Sphere. The message of the Maya Sphere is that the key of the existence of the Rabbeinu Shalom's Torah is rooted in Ve'avta L'Rayacha Kamayacha. That to the extent that it's humanly possible to obliterate any differences between my concern for myself and my concern for the next person. It may not be 100% possible to obliterate any difference. I don't know. I think that others disagree with Ramchal on this point. But that striving to draw as close as we can conceivably can to that ethic, therein is the key of Torah. This was Rabbi Akiva's So in the time of the Ga'inim, they chose to reflect back on Rabbi Akiva upon his teachings. That the key of the Nitzchias of Torah Klal Yisrael is dependent on the human interaction which takes place. It's the school of for us to be able to survive. So that's what we focus on in the Maya Sphere. Now, in every area of halacha, there are certain shailas which possess the public mind, which you'll hear constantly discussed. And sometimes part of the problem of the constant discussion is acharei kichlei sakol, the halacha becomes foggier and foggier. The discussion confuses rather than illuminates. And this topic is one which is certainly suffered from that fate. Somewheres, I don't know, in the last 20 years or so, people discovered the fact that we find already in some of the Achrayim discussed the issue of what happens to a cotton who becomes bar mitzvah in the middle of Sefiras Hayom. I cannot recall anymore how many droshes, bar mitzvah droshes, I've heard on this subject. Endless droshes. And as we'll see at the end, unfortunately, all the endless drushes, what they've accomplished, in one regard, is to create confusion in the halacha. Now, how does this work? If we assume that, we know in Sphira, there's a machlokes of each night, somehow independent of the others, or each night is totally dependent on the other night. And if I skip the night, so that brings the whole enterprise crashing down. So the cheshbon is like this. If each night is independent, so this child, he counted the first 16 nights as a cup. On night 17, he becomes a goat. So let's ignore the first 16 nights altogether. Tell you. But night 17 is a goal. So even from this thing, if he never counted the first 16 nights, he still counts all the rest of the nights of the prophet. But if all the nights are dependent upon one another, then the chayra, what he did as a cult, has no significance when he's a goal. So he hasn't counted the first 16 nights. So if he hasn't counted the first 16 nights, how can I make a bracha on night number 17? This is the basic cheshbon. Now, to me it's almost inherent in the Shulchan Aruch that something's wrong with this cheshbon. Why? This is a shayla which is a repetitive shayla. There's no year that goes by in the history of Klal Yisrael that doesn't have the shayla thousands of times. And in these 7 weeks, yes, Baruch Hashem, there's a lot of people born every year. So how in the world is it that the Shulchan Aruch, if it is a problem, never addressed this problem? I mean, he couldn't die. The Beis Yosef had this problem just as well as you and I have this problem. So the Beis Yosef had something to say about it. So why didn't they say it? And if the Beis Yosef thought the whole problem wasn't a problem in the first place, so then Matayu Marot, so there was nothing to talk about. But if the Beis Yosef thought that there was a problem there, so why in the world did he not address it in the Shulchan Aruch? And I don't believe that there's any good answer to that question. Which always led me to be suspicious of this pilpul, that it's somewhere it's flawed. In terms of its halacha l'maaseh shebo, it's flawed. Now, there are probably at least two different approaches that we can take. There may be further ones. We could do this from far afield. So we'll do it first from far afield, and then we'll do it indigenously. From far afield, we'll do it in the following fashion. In this synagogue, this past Friday night, we had a minyan at 5:54 in the afternoon. And the Plaga Mincha was at 6:30 in the afternoon. By the time we arrived for the second minyan, the shul was locked down, everyone disappeared, so we're probably home already for a good half an hour. They were made kiddush, they washed, they were up to the fish already, and they were starting usher. Now, what is the status of? What's the status of Tosu Shabbos? You made kiddush during Tosu Shabbos. So what's the status of Tosu Shabbos? So in Tosu Shabbos, we have 3 days. We have a day in which holds that Tosu Shabbos is derisive. So that tells me that this period is Midrash Shabbos. We have a view which says that Tosu Shabbos is Midrabbanan. Midrash is not Shabbos, Midrabbanan is Shabbos. And then we have the view of the Rambam, who has neither Tosu Shabbos nor Tosu Yom Tov altogether. They don't exist in the Rambam's world. Only Tosu Yom Kippurim exists. So, how did we make Kiddush Friday night at 7 o'clock at night, at 7:10 at night, long before Shkia came, half an hour before Shkia made Kiddush? How did we do that? Not even Suffolk Bible yet. So what's the pshat? Now we could ask ourselves, even if one davens a little bit later, I mean, what would be the heter exactly to make Kiddush during Ben Hashmoshes? We don't read Kriya Shema during Ben Hashmoshes. How do we make Kiddush Ben Hashmoshes? So, even the Mogen Avraham addresses this problem. And let's work in the following fashion. First, we'll give the Rambam's answer. The Rambam's answer is really not relevant to us in the Hilchos Ayinah, but it's an interesting answer in his own right. So, the Rambam is the one that says there's no din Tosu Shabbos. So, what exactly happened altogether here, according to the Rambam? So the Rambam says, well, it could be Makabel Shabbos, but a real din Tosu Shabbos in the sense where there isn't, according to the Rambam. So, but the Rambam has a very interesting formulation. The Rambam says that one has to make Kiddush Samach L'Knisos, so near the beginning of Shabbos. It doesn't have to be one Shabbos, near the beginning of Shabbos. Near the beginning of Shabbos, one has to make it. They can make it right before Shabbos, that was also fine. Proclaim the coming of Shabbos, that's all. So that would be one answer to the problem. If Tosu Shabbos is the Raisa, so we have a sound answer to the problem. Toys of Shabbos Midrabbanan, no. So what do we do? So the Morgan Avram cites a Mordechai. And the Mordechai is almost remarkable halacha. The Mordechai says that Dinei Derabbanan have standing on a deraisa tikkun level.
Can
deraisa tikkun, perhaps, but that's what he says. They have standing on a deraisa tikkun level. And therefore, even though Tos Shabbos is only midrabbanan, but the Torah recognizes it. Now, how and why is that exactly? The Mordechai doesn't spell out. We have a parallel statement, a different realm, but in a way parallel. Tosfos in Sukkot of Gimel Amud Aleph. It is an issue if one could have one sit in the sukkah and have one's table outside the sukkah. Because we're afraid that a person may decide to pull closer to the table and wind up will pop out of the sukkah without looking up and realizing he's out of the sukkah. So, Tosfos says that if you hold that you may not have the table outside the sukkah, that's a din d'rabbanan. But one who ate in such a fashion was not even yotze the deraisa tikkun of sukkah. So how did we accomplish this jump? It started with an isa d'rabbanan. And Tosfos now says, if I violated the isa d'rabbanan, I was not yotze even the deraisa. Eger has difficulty from a number of places with this. At least the starting point for this Tosfos, maybe it's a starting point for this Mordechai to maybe. But if we took it in this fashion, that the Torah mandates that we observe Dinei Derabbanan and Isra of Lo Yisoser, and the Prima Godim says this in Hilchos Tefillin, reference to this Tosfos. Therefore, the din d'rabbanan has a deraisa tikkun source to it, a deraisa tikkun basis. So that could be one possible way of learning. Now, it may not help us in our realm, why? Because we're dealing with a kotel. A godel, I'm chuyiv in mitzvahs minatar. Minatar, I'm chuyiv to listen to the din d'rabbanan. So we can say that in my life, I have chiyuvei deraisa now, vis-a-vis this din. Whereas by a katan, has no chiyuvei deraisa. So if we formulate it in this fashion, so we would not be able to bridge the gap. The Minchas Chinuch, I believe, does suggest, though, that based on this, that Dinei Derabbanan have chashivas on a deraisa tikkun level. Perhaps not the Prima Godim formulation. They have standing. And therefore, if I made Kiddush on Friday night, even though it's only Shabbos with Derabbanan, but nevertheless, since the act has a deraisa tikkun basis for it, so it has standing to be yotzei din deraisa. That's how the Morgan Avraham applies this Mordechai. So perhaps that's equally true when it comes to Sfiras HaYomer, that a din d'rabbanan has standing on a deraisa tikkun level. And the fact that he counted, he was mechuyev d'rabbanan to count because of the din chinuch. The Torah recognizes that. It's a yesh, something, perhaps. That's one type of approach.
The din chinuch creates an obligation in the Rabbanan as strong as an adult has to listen to the Rabbanan?
Well, it's not exactly as strong. No, it's not. That's what I'm saying. If we postulated that it would have to be as strong as the full deraisa, in fact, it wouldn't work. But the Sefer, the Minchas Chinuch, suggests that a lesser degree would also suffice.
And that's enough to carry you forward to night 17 when it really becomes.
Yes, that's one type of approach. A second type of approach is the type of approach that we discussed on the last night of Yom Tov in the Sefer HaChinuch that the Sefer HaChinuch gives a very good spin to the idea, to the machlokes of if the knights are dependent upon one another or not, on each other or not. And that is, from the Minchas, from the Sefer HaChinuch, it seems the issue is, how do I count? What's the framework of the counting? If I don't have a day 16, there's no day 17. Now the other side is that all of Klal Yisrael counted, so I count, so they've established the framework. But all I need is some type of counting. I don't need, that's all I really need. It's not so much in the Kiyum HaMitzvah, that I was Mekayim the Mitzvah. It's rather, if I didn't count the 16, how am I up to 17? Now, from that standpoint, we're certainly far from Mukhrach that just because I counted when I'm a cotton, that's a zero. I still count until 16. I'm up to 17 on my count. I'm not saying that I had to be Yotzei Mitzvah, but it was a serious counting. I counted in the context of Sphere. So why should that not count? So from that standpoint, we could also argue that the cotton's activity, when he counted the first 16 nights, is that it's at least the counting. He counted. It was a counting. He's not starting from day 17. And especially in light of the fact, there's a very interesting anomaly in the halacha. The stipler, that's how it addresses it in a piece in Ksuvus. Sometimes we say, Kotten is ein lo das. Doesn't have das. And yet, we can write an encyclopedia of psukim. Now we have the pasuk ish, that's mamayit kotten. So why do we need a pasuk of ish, that's mamayit kotten, if he doesn't have das? Elamai, the rock tunnel that have das. Whether they're very swift and at a young age, or as the halacha certainly recognized in Hilchos the Dorm, a mufla somach leish, in the last year before godless, that a child has a significant das, and perhaps qualitatively not much different than the das that he'll have when he's 13. So why doesn't that das suffice? Only the status is because of Zeres HaKosov. And Svar, who says that it has to be? And just because it's excluded in one parsha doesn't have to be excluded in a different parsha in the Torah. So certainly if we say, they acknowledge that a cotton has das, and he counted the first 16 nights, so we established a framework. So that certainly would be a resolution of this problem. As I said before, that all the people at times serves to obfuscate rather than to illuminate. A bar mitzvah bacha once came to Rosh Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, and he told him a whole pilpul on this shiloh. So Rosh Shlomo Zalman listened to the pilpul. He says, it's a very nice pilpul. He says, but I want you to do one thing. At the end of your whole pilpul, to say, but halacha l'maisa, you're supposed to make a bracha. Yeah. And that's what I say. What all, unfortunately, the aftermath of all of this pilpul is it creates confusion what the halacha is. Shlomo Zalman told us, I wanted to say at the end, I guess I'll quote from Shlomo Zalman, that the halacha is you have to make a bracha. End of discussion. But you know, the discussion is important to be mefalvel in Torah. But we can't obscure the halacha because of that. Now there's another interesting shayla, which really touches upon how you learn what the machlokes is. Now, if we take the simple version of the machlokes, all the nights of one mitzvah. So now what happens if I skip night 48? I can't count now night 49. Fine. What happened to the first 47 nights? So there are those that would say it's a bracha levatol. Because I wasn't yet in the mitzvah, and that's it. Everything went up in smoke. Now that's assuming that everything is all tied together. Yeah. If I learn in the fashion that I learned according to Sefer HaChinuch, that they're not one mitzvah in that sense. They're only a mitzvah in the sense that I need one night to establish the framework for the other nights. So all the nights up until 1948 was a full-fledged counting. There was nothing lacking. Even when I don't count 48, doesn't undermine, only undermines my 49. It doesn't undermine the first 47. So according to that, there would be no chash that anything that I did retroactively is a bracha levatolah. Now, let's put it, instead of going in retrospect, let's look in a prospective fashion. It's third night of Sfira. A man knows he's going to have surgery on the sixth day of Sfira, and he's not going to. He's going to be out for 24 hours straight. That's it. He'll be out. Whatever. It's a complicated surgery. The anesthesia. Whatever it is. For more than 24 hours, he's not going to know. By the time he wakes up, more than 24 hours will have passed.
He's definitely going to miss the
process. So he's definitely going to miss day four. That's day four, or whatever it is. Day four. Day five is not going to exist. He's going to go to sleep on day four, and he's going to wake up on day six. So he's allowed to make a broch on the first few days. Now, according to the formulation we have in the Sefer HaChinuch, then there's no problem. That's absolutely fine. But what happens if we don't take that formulation? According to the view of those that it's a chashash, it's a brocha levatolah retroactively. Now, I don't understand how in the lomdus squares this. I don't, you know. In the Sefer HaChinuch, I understand it. But Shlomo Zalman, the Tzal, wrote that a person is still mechuyev to make a brocha. Now you mechuyev to count. So you have to count. I mean, I don't understand the rationale how that could be. Just with the lumbus, I don't understand. But it says, whatever you mechuyev to do, now you mechuyev to do. So now you have to count what the future is, whatever will happen in the future happens in the future.
So he wouldn't consider a brocha levatolah then?
He seems to want to follow, even no matter how one would look at it retroactively, but going forward, one has to count. Because it's a chiyuv. I don't understand fully his rationale for that statement.
It's a very hard concept to think that something could be retroactively roughly about the book.
Yeah, it's the approach of the Sefer HaChinuch is a lot more satisfying.
Otherwise, none of us could make a drop, because you always don't know if you're going to make it to the end. You make the get, you may, I don't know, whatever.
To start in such an endeavor seems to be dangerous.
That surgery could get delayed also, and the person could continue to... It's the same...
It's an interesting twist. Now, I don't understand in his cheshbon how he works that out. I don't understand. Within the context of the Sefer HaChinuch, I understand it very well.
Yeah.
You know, so as I'm saying, I'm not coming to La Halacha, we're probably in agreement with each other. But how he arrived at that Halacha, I'm not so sure. So, that's another aspect of the Halacha which plays off this. If they're all, when we say it's one mitzvah, means they're all dependent upon each other. So, if you're missing any part of it, it's tightnished. Or they're really not so dependent, they're only dependent on each other to establish a framework. So as long as I establish the framework, I'm fine. So that's also an interesting twist in Sfira. Now, there is a question that I've never fully worked out. I'll share it with you, but I'll just leave it as a question. I've never fully worked this out. We have a basic approach to the bracha during Sfira, which runs in this fashion. Now, we're not sure 100% what the halacha is, whether the nights are dependent upon each other or not. So you say, if I forgot a night, I don't make a bracha. That if I forgot a night and I counted in the daytime, which I count without a bracha, because not all Rishonim agree that I can count in the daytime. Or I'm not sure if I forgot last night, so if I have two factors in my favor, then I keep on counting with a bracha. So it's Svek Sveka. Now, it happens to be, if you look at the beginning of the Chayodim, it's around Klal Hei, and I don't look up the exact Ma'am Bokhim today. But in the Chayodim says that when it comes to brachas, we are very, very finicky. And we, even if there's a svek svek in favor of making a broch, he says, we don't make a broch. Because we're so meticulous about avoiding a broch, even if a svek svek says to make a broch, I don't make it. So here it seems, in Hilchos Tfiras HaEimah, that a svek svek suffices to make a broch. At times I thought perhaps it wasn't a svek svek, but the Achroidim seemed to take it as a real svek svek. So I'm not really sure. Unless the pshat really is something else there, according to, at least according to the Chayotu. And that is, that is this an even Stephen Machlaikis? Or is there a T on the halacha which is right? So I venture that the equal halacha is the view that the knights are not mocking each other. That's the equal halacha. Because I know that in certain circumstances, Ramosha Zatzal told people to rely on that data. And even if they skipped a night, under certain circumstances, whatever they may be, they should go on counting with the broch. So, and apparently, it would seem that he held that the equal halacha was like the view that the knights are not ma'akim. Now, if that's the case, then perhaps that's the pshat. So, the fact that we don't make a broch in the first place, if I skip the night altogether, is only because of a cheshbon which is similar, that when there's a svek svek, I don't make a broch. Because there's some doubt, it's not 100% clear. It's not clear cut. So once we reduce it to less than that, yeah, that even according to that, I may still go on making a bracha. So then maybe that's enough that the Chayotim also agrees that I make a bracha. In other words, it's not in a conventional svek svek, all things being equal, so I wouldn't make a bracha. But since it's not a conventional svek svek, to the contrary, it will assume that it's weighted lahalocha, that the eager is that I can make a bracha even if I skipped all the other nights. But rather, the sole reason that I don't make a bracha is because when we're not 1,000% sure, when there's some doubt, we back off from our bracha. So maybe now all we're doing in the Shulchan Aruch is by adding the second svara, we're reducing it further, and it's now even less than a svek svek in effect. In other words, the tzad not to make a bracha is reduced to less than you would have in the tzad when you only have a svek svek. And maybe that's the cheshbon. This is always somewhat confounded me, and I'm still somewhat confounded, but I'm suggesting an answer to it.
So you say you don't make a bracha during the day, if we just say the yom, only because of the svek svek?
No, in the daytime we don't make a bracha, because many rishonim hold we're not yotzei in the daytime altogether. Because of tmimus. Why don't I make a bracha if I skip a night and then come to the next night? And I didn't count altogether.
Right,
so why don't I make a bracha? So it could be not because it's a 50-50 suffer. It could be that the equal halacha is that the nights don't interfere with each other. Except since there is a view that they interfere, so I don't make a bracha for that reason. But not that it's a 50-50 shayla. So Mamela, anything which I add to it, which reduces the suffix to a lesser suffix, maybe it reaches the point that I can even make a roll. Okay. Rabbi Yisrael, let's get ready for Mamela.